This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
My first reaction, because the first deal I saw, I'm not sure the order you saw it yesterday, Paul. It is Danny and Gallant here. The order that I saw it was Marcus Peters traded to Baltimore. And my first reaction was fantastic. Fantastic because I think he'll end up playing this week. I think that that Marcus Peters is the kind of guy that for 1 to 5 plays can match up with anybody in the league. I think you cannot trust him to play in a defense. And that goes back to his time in college and watching the way he played at the University of Washington before he got kicked off. And I think that the Ravens traded for him because they need him to play right away. I think there's a 50-50 chance that you're going to see Earl Thomas and Marcus Peters yelling at each other on the field on Sunday.
Oh, no doubt about it. But having a guy like Marcus Peters is, I think, a lot easier when you have someone like Earl Thomas that can make up for all the gambling that he does.
Absolutely 100% correct. Earl is the great eraser in the back. So that was my first reaction, was like, the Rams are panicking. They want him off the island, which I can understand. I can completely, you watch his spotty effort from time to time, and he is a guy that, it's one thing to have a safety that gambles. It's another thing to have a cornerback that gambles. It's another thing to have a quarterback that is willing to do those sort of things, because that absolutely can sink an entire defense. And I think that, look, Peters gets burned. He gives up big plays.
DK Metcalf took advantage of that on Thursday.
Then I saw that they'd traded for Jalen Ramsey. And there was a moment where I was like, oh. And that was before I saw what they gave up for him. Big picture, this is a great trade for the Seattle Seahawks. Big picture, it's absolutely fantastic that the team that's beaten you in the division each of the past 2 years has given up their best route to addressing their shortcomings, has sacrificed that to acquire a cornerback who they hope is an upgrade on a guy who was not a bad player for them, Marcus Peters. They've given up a ton of resources for the right to pay a guy a ton of cash who's really good, and I'm not sure, I do not think that that team is one cornerback away from being back on top of the division.
Yeah, they need help on offense. It's not on defense that they need. You know, if I were to put together a flow chart or draw something on a whiteboard that would help explain the Rams, the situation that they're in right now, I would first write this on the whiteboard, then I would write it on the whiteboard, and then I would turn around and say, this ain't it, because they need to get offensive help. Where is the running back that's replacing Todd Gurley? Where is the offensive lineman that's making Jared Goff look less like a pee pants in the pocket? You need...
Wait, a pee pants?
Do you feel like he looks comfortable back there right now?
Not necessarily. You feel he soils himself?
Listen, I feel like he strikes me as someone who, when the going gets tough, he wants
to
go to the bathroom.
Strap on a pamper?
Is this another iteration of cake pantsing? Have we evolved this? Do we have our own now?
Well, the cake pantsing is a more serious thing. I don't think the pee pantsing is from fear, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like it's fear based.
Don't think he has pocket presence, and I think that's always going to be one of his detriments, because he can throw a very nice deep ball, but when you have an offensive line the way that it is, and you have a running back that can't support you, these are situations that are not changing with Jalen Ramsey being acquired. Okay, the defense is a little bit better. But then go back to the Marcus Peters move. The Marcus Peters move was done to free up cap space. And I honestly, I don't know why I thought Les Snead was a good general manager, because I'm looking at the situation. They traded Marcus Peters for essentially a guy named Kenny Young, who's played 27% of the snaps for the Ravens this season, 31% of their special team snaps. I don't even know what he does based off of that number of snaps that he's had this season. And that did free up about $5 million in cap space for a team that, before the trade, had $3 million in cap space. So, to me, that's why those moves were made. They were trying to free up space to get Jalen Ramsey in. So, they actually subtracted in getting rid of Marcus Peters, who, yeah, maybe isn't their cup of tea, but, I mean, Aqib Talib's on IR. Marcus Peters is your number two corner if you have Jalen Ramsey. Who's their number two corner now? I don't even know.
That changed. The difference, they're... They essentially made a swap that the difference between Jalen Ramsey and Marcus Peters is sufficient that it's worth 2 first-round picks. That's essentially the change here, right? That the difference, that the upgrade that Jalen Ramsey constitutes over Marcus Peters' two first-round picks. That's possible. The problem is that they're more than a cornerback away. And here's where the long-term implication is. The Rams have just sacrificed their ability to address their offensive line problems, right?
Yeah.
They just sacrificed their ability to address their offensive line problems, which is going to make it harder for them to protect Goff, who they're going to hope progresses, and also going to make it more difficult for them to replace Todd Gurley by finding a running back that's able to work in tandem with the offensive line. That's the long-term picture. Short-term, I don't think it's the addition of Ramsey to the Rams that hurts so much as the fact that a player like Ramsey doesn't come to the Seahawks. And I don't think the Seahawks should have traded two first-round picks for him. But there is a small part of me that's like, man, that's the player with the kind of attitude that Seattle could benefit from. They're still trying to find that swagger on their defense. They don't have it yet. They added Jadeveon Clowney, and we all thought that was going to do it. And I don't think Clowney's played bad, but they haven't been able to find that guy who's able to kind of change the temperature of the room for their defense.
I'd have thought about trading for Jalen Ramsey, but the cost of two first-round picks, that is something that I think you only give up for a tackle. And we saw it this offseason.
Gas mask bong tackle?
With Laramie Tunsil. Yes, exactly. Old gas mask.
Is that to Pearl Jam?
I actually, when the Houston Texans traded for Laramie Tunsil, I made a song, a Laramie song to the tune of Jeremy by Pearl Jam, yes.
No kidding.
Yes,
what would it? I'm not going to ask you to yarl, although it seems like you're pretty unabashed about yarling.
I'm good at it. That's why.
What was a lyric from Jeremy, from Laramie?
Well, talking about Bill O'Brien, butt chin shooting steam. That was one of the lyrics. Honestly, off the top of my head, I don't really remember it because I had to read it off of the script. I don't have the attention span to remember such trivia.
Really? You just yarl? You're kind of like a vessel for your yarling.
Don't get me wrong. Like the lyrics on this song are incredible, and I think it's up to everybody to interpret how the actual yarling went. But back to the point of what you trade multiple first-round picks for. Quarterback, I remember having this conversation with Nick Wright, who's now at Fox Sports 1. Like, we agreed on the fact that you would trade essentially a first-round pick. If you don't have a quarterback, you would trade a first-round pick for every single year that you have a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, wouldn't you?
I agree with that, but here's the – I would not trade – if somebody offered me that kind of franchise quarterback for first-round picks, I would immediately think that they knew something I didn't know and would not make the trade.
Fair point.
When does it ever work out? When has it ever worked out that a team trading first-round picks and stuff – has gotten a quarterback that's paid off for him?
I don't know, but I think the Pittsburgh Steelers should make that experiment with Philip Rivers.
Philip Rivers. They should have made a bet before the game where it said at midfield, okay, if we win, you get our quarterback. If you win, you get our defense. and decide. Like, it's one of those things where, like, it's two sides that both know they're not going anywhere in their current
unless
configuration. But if you had it, they should have classified those stakes. I'm trying to think because The Packers traded a first-round pick for Brett Favre,
mm-hmm.
and that worked. But Favre wasn't the starter at that point down in Atlanta when they got him. That was still sort of taking a flyer on a guy. I'm trying to think of when Kevin Cobb gets traded, even when Washington traded up for Robert Griffin III, which looked like it was a good trade at the time it was made. It doesn't end up panning out.
It doesn't happen with proven commodities at quarterback, which is the point.
If somebody's going to trade you a quarterback, he's probably got something wrong with him. You just can't tell it yet.
Exactly. But in principle, I'm talking about what would you give up for a certain position? You would give up all sorts of first-round picks to get a great quarterback if you don't have one. Then you would give up, I think, based off of what the Texans did this offseason, which is a crazy move, no doubt, but the Texans' biggest problem over the last couple of seasons is the offensive line, and they couldn't get a guy in free agency. So this is the only way that they could go about getting one. For a lot of teams, this is the only way they can go about getting a tackle. You trade multiple first-round picks for a guy who is proven and seems to have a lot of upside, and that's what Laramie Tunsil does have. Then after that, okay, what positions are you willing to trade multiple first-round picks for? And should a cornerback be there? Because cornerback is probably after quarterback and after tackle. It's after pass rusher. It would probably be fourth in the pecking order of teams positions that you would trade a lot to get an elite player at it. But I don't think you would ever go multiple first-round picks, and the Rams went multiple first-round picks and a fourth-round pick to bring in Ramsey. And to me, they're paying a lot for something that helps out, but it doesn't fix everything. I will highlight the New England Patriots defense as an example of maybe what the Rams are trying to emulate. Stephon Gilmore, I think it was Darrell Revis who said it last week, is the best corner in the NFL right now. And it's nice that they have him, and that definitely is like the anchor point for their defense, but they have a really good secondary around him. The Rams don't have that around Jalen Ramsey. And now they have no ability to address further in the secondary, no ability to address the offensive line, and no ability to address the running back position. And cool, you can draft the guy in the third round and hope that it works out, but the Alvin Kamaras of the world are a rarity, especially for them to just fall right into your lap. So the Rams, I think, shot themselves in the foot long term. I think we both agree on that. But I also think, you know, this season, like, just as I feel just as comfortable sticking a fork in them today as I did yesterday when I did stick a fork in them. So I'm going to stick another fork in them.
I've still got tines on the skin. I'm still not ready to fully skewer them yet, but the tines are definitely on the skin. The question it brings up for me is Seattle. And Seattle right now should feel very confident sitting next to a team that they know is desperate and sitting next to a team with the 49ers who are confident right now and feel like they've arrived, but I still think we have something to lose. The Seahawks suddenly became, I think, the most experienced team. There's still a part of me that believes that they're missing something on their defense, and I'm not sure if what they're missing they have on the roster.
And are they desperate for anything right now? Because the Rams clearly are desperate.
Well, they've got to be desperate for pass rush, right? You go two straight games without a sack, you've got to be desperate for pass rush, but you're still trying to talk yourself into the fact that Ziggy Ansah and or Jadeveon Clowney is going to be able to emerge into that role, and Oget and Jaron Reed back should help you.
What do you think John Schneider's telling himself right now? Because if I were sitting in John Schneider's shoes, I would be telling myself right now, the talent is there, it should work. Because it should, and honestly, it should work. Like, they're just not executing. I don't think this is a problem of coaching or a problem of personnel acquiring. This is something that should be happening that's not.
It's strange because when they traded for Clowney, I was seen as a pessimist for believing that I set the over-under line on sacks between the two players at 12.5. And everybody told me that was ridiculously low. And I was like, wait, watch, like, the possibility of one of those guys getting hurt. Clowney hadn't had an offseason. Ansah was coming off of surgery. The idea that you're able to project their best performances going forward in a new system, that won't necessarily work out. I now feel that I'm on the more optimistic side of believing, no, they're going to get it together and they're going to be okay. It's just not as good out of the gates. If I was John Schneider, I would be sitting there thinking, let's go. It's time to go.
Yeah.
Let's go. Everybody's got their feet underneath them now. Everybody's comfortable with where they're playing. Like, let's turn it loose and start getting after people now.
I think the one position where they will get desperate at, because I don't think it's going to come with the pass rush, I feel that Jaron Reed is going to make the difference that allows for Clowney and Ansah to finally explode. I think it's going to be a big help, no matter what the interior guys have done over the last couple of weeks, whether it's Al Woods making that tackle or it's Quentin Jefferson deflecting passes. You bring in a guy like Reed, okay, that changes things. On the offensive line, I looked at a post, I think it was on Field Goals yesterday, and they were highlighting the play, and there's one specific play. It was, I think it was the second touchdown pass that Russell Wilson had to Jerron Brown, or was the touchdown pass that he had at the very end of the game, where George Vant is lined up against Myles Garrett and holds his own. And then on the right side, Ifedi held, I think, Olivier Vernon as well. So you had, like, them doing a very good job in that situation, and I wonder if that's something that can be built on or if that was an anomaly in that game. Because that was a very good play for those two.
Yeah, it was. I think it's going to be dangerous to project the way Seattle's offensive line played. That it's going to be dangerous to think that they are going to be improved. They need to hold it together right now while Duane Brown gets back. I don't expect him to play this week, but I think that the bigger thing is that they do expect him to come back this season. We'll see. I'm not sure about their offensive line. I think I'm optimistic that their defensive line is going to improve.
I am too.
And I think Jaron Reed will help. I still have questions about who's going to end up at safety. I don't think Tedrick Thompson and Bradley McDougal are your two starting. I don't think they're your two starting safeties by the time this season ends. We'll see if Marquise Blair can work his way in. But it's time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Well, the Patriots have suspended Michael Bennett for what he says was a philosophical disagreement with his position coach, Brett Bielema.
I think he wanted to play. I think he feels he's not playing enough.
Well, did you hear what his quote was like 2 weeks ago? They talked to him about playing three technique or five technique, and he said, you mean the zero position? I don't know how that's going to go. I do like the idea of a philosophical difference. We were joking about this in the first, like, what do you think the true meaning of free will is? It is what it is, or is it? What is football?
The coach was like, it's predetermined. And by predetermined, just follow what I say.
Does He's that like, fist belong in that wall? On the true plane of existence?
Philosophically, all of the different difficulties that are there. Yeah, that always amuses me when people come out and make those. I don't think he's on the Patriots by the time the season ends.
Interesting.
I don't think he'll end up staying there.
He got Michael a strike. That's something.
And Michael Bennett is not the kind of guy who has unspoken thoughts. Like, that's just, for better or for worse, there's a little bit of me that's surprised he's still there right now.
I agree.
There's a little bit, because that's not a place that tends to tolerate much in the way of dissent. But we'll see. Long term, I don't think he ends up there. And I think it speaks to the reason why Seattle turned the page. It wasn't a football performance decision when they traded him to Philadelphia a year and a half ago.
Two official quarterback benchings have come down today as Ryan Tannehill has been named the starter in Tennessee and Ryan Fitzpatrick in Miami. So both Marcus Mariota and Josh Rosen are taking a seat.
That's another thing I can add to my list of Oregon gripes. Joey Harrington, Akili Smith, Marcus Mariota.
No, not Marcus.
Yeah.
Yes,
no.
Marcus.
He can't be
I
in the hatred
Marcus
bin.
Is there.
Oh, he
El
can.
Busto.
You know why
El Busto.
You know why he's in there for me, Jessamine? Because the people of Tennessee, cute little hill folk that they are, for whatever reason, think that they understand the NFL and kept on trying to Titansplain to me that Mariota actually isn't bad, that he's a victim of circumstance. And I just kept on telling them, no, sorry, stick to watching the Tennessee Volunteers be awful and getting Greg Schiano fired before he got hired.
We had the Jeff Fisher cover for a while, who just was death to quarterbacks. So I think people hung on to that one a little bit. And I did, too. I did, too.
Here's my question. Can we have a show where we have two people making fun of different hill folk? Because I take I squarely take aim at the West Coast rednecks because I'm one of them. And now you've taken a shot at the Tennessee hill folk.
Oh, yeah.
We're in dangerous territory of becoming elitist here.
Uh-oh. Well, and I've got the whole state of New Jersey.
Yeah, that's true. Lydia with her Seattle sophistication. I think what, the only answer is I have to become the resident redneck. I have to become the person, the son of a logger who will speak. I will practice plain speaking and good old-fashioned common sense.
Well, based off the way that you were trying to do a British accent yesterday, Danny O'Neill, I don't think you can do that. But if you want me to act like I'm from, I chop wood for a living, I can do that.
Best thing my dad ever did was he waited. It showed the patience to wait a year for me to chop wood, like when I was 8. He's like, I don't think you're ready yet. I don't think you're ready. So he lost my free labor that year, but it more than made up for it because I felt like I was given a privilege or an honor the next year when I started to wield an axe. I think he made out in the transaction.
Listen, I know it's Oregon Hate Week, but are you impressed at all by the fact that Clint Eastwood was once an Oregon logger?
Yeah. Logging's a tough business, man. Like, the legitimate, like, up there, if you were going to give me cement truck drivers are very, very tough. Commercial fishermen are exceptionally tough. Loggers are in your top three of just by occupation toughest dudes you'll ever come across.
Wow, we really went somewhere there.
You're impressed with the references, or do you question the?
I'm just saying your guys' stream of consciousness is something that is, it's a beauty to behold.
Do not shake hands with a cement truck driver. The guy will crush every bone in your hand.
That wasn't even a drop. Danny just said that. That came to his brain right now.
Yeah.
The NFL admits that the second hands to the face flag on Trey Flowers on Monday night was an error.
Oh, yeah. Everything's better now. This is the dumbest. Here are stupid things that happen in sports. The NCAA coming back and vacating wins.
Yes.
The NBA's final two-minute critique of the officiating. And these stupid apologies. It doesn't accomplish anything.
They should
be abolished. You'd be better off of just not saying anything.
So sorry. We're so sorry, Detroit.
It doesn't do anything. Does that make anyone feel better?
Apologies in general are interesting because usually they are done to make the guilty party feel better about themselves, more so than they're actually done to make the party that has been the recipient of whatever required the apology feel better about what was done to them.
The apology should be delivered if the situation can be avoided in the future. That's the situation where you have an apology, where the person can say, I'm sorry for doing this. Here were my motivations for doing it. I understand now that I shouldn't have done it. I will do my best not to do it in the future.
What if they paid Trey Flowers? You know how you get fined if you did? That's a post. We looked at that, and now you get fined. Well, hey, Trey, we looked at that. Here's $15,000.
Yes, that would mean something. This is just like, sorry, we're human. We don't always get it right. Doesn't make anybody feel better. Accomplishes nothing.
Jessamine, to your scenario, I mean, I would just want bad calls to happen all the time then, though, because I'm greedy.
It would kind of make things fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I want the reps to screw me over here. I want to get that $15,000 of cheddar at the end of the week.
Cheddar. What about...
It's all right. We were going down another wormhole on cheese.
Yeah, no. Just different names for money. I like cabbage. The cabbage is done picked, man. That's what you say after you get your paycheck.
Give me that green.
I like a Brinks truck. Just like the whole truck.
Back it up.
What else we got, Jess?
Finally today, actually on that same note, Sean Payton is convinced that we will have full-time NFL refs at some point. Do you guys see it happening?
Why do we care about this?
Because it's going to make them better at their jobs,
no,
obviously, by default.
Why would it make it? Why does anyone think this would make them better at their jobs?
Because then Jerome Boger will know the rules.
No, it's not. I don't think it's a matter of expertise. It's not like these guys are dumb. I actually, of all the different things people talk about, I don't know why people think that full-time officials, having them full-time will help them be better. Like, do you think you're going to lock them in? Like, 40 hours a week, you have to go in and study the rules. Like, the point is they're asked to do too much in a specific time period, a window of opportunity. You can't be better at natural reactions.
But don't you think that if you are a doctor or a lawyer in your off season, just naturally your brain is other places, especially if you have a private practice? There's got to be more on your mind.
So you want to have them just sit at home and do nothing?
Yes.
I mean, do their job, do one job, study and be the best at their one job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't think they need to know more, though. I could be convinced. You want to put them to a re-education camp, that's fine with me. I'm not going to get in the way of that. Like, that's fine. You want to lock them up and have them run drills and stuff, and
exactly. We'll
get better at hand-eye coordination.
I mean, football players practice football all year round or do off-season things. Why can't they do off-season things?
Well, but football players could do an off-season job if they wanted, right? Like, if you wanted to go work at a bank, you could.
You'd be playing in the NFL if you were doing an off-season job. You have to dedicate your whole life to this one thing.
Oh, I don't know about... I think that players don't work in the off-season because they don't have to, because they make enough money otherwise.
We need players to be loggers off the field.
Legitimately, Chuck Darby was a nose tackle for the Seattle Seahawks. And the first time I found out his dad was an actual logger, I was like, oh, I'll bet this kid is incredibly tough.
Sure enough, he was.
It is Danny and Gallant. We're going to take a look ahead at what Seattle's homecoming to Earl Thomas means. How do you feel about Seattle's former safety coming back? That's next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
How do you greet Earl Thomas this weekend?
That's a great question.
And it's really a question for everybody. Text line 710-710, powered by Coors Light. I don't harbor any of the same sort of, I want him to be taught better. Like, I want the Seahawks to have the last word when it comes to Richard Sherman. And I think that's petty. Some people have said it's more severe than petty. But there is a sense that when Richard left, it was that he knew best. And I know that there was a fair amount of antagonism of what he felt towards Seattle's quarterback. So I think there's a little bit of, nobody wants the know-it-all to have the last word. I genuinely like Richard. But I don't want him to win that rivalry. I don't have the same feeling with Earl. Like, I don't have the same feeling of, like, I want him to be. And maybe it's because Seattle decided not to re-sign him, whereas I felt Richard not forced the Seahawks' hand, but there had been enough disruption by Richard before that when they decided to cut him, you knew where that part was coming from. And this seemed more of a business transaction with Earl Thomas. But I'm not sure about how people feel about him. I think he'll get cheered. I think he, and generally probably, I don't want to say fans what should happen, but I don't sense that there is that kind of hostility in the same way of there's a rivalry still with Richard Sherman. I don't sense there's a rivalry between Seattle and Earl Thomas.
I don't get that sense either, but we will learn a lot about that, I think, based off of the way that the stadium handles the Baltimore Ravens' entrance on Sunday. Are they going to let the defense be welcomed individually? Are they going to force the offense to be introduced? Because and then we'll actually hear it when Earl Thomas comes out. And I'm of the belief that if you have won a Super Bowl for a city or a franchise, only extenuating circumstances should prevent you from getting a hero's welcome.
Okay, what are the Brett Favre comes back to Green Bay as a member of the Minnesota Vikings.
The extenuating circumstances that he is on the Minnesota Vikings.
He forced his way out of town and ended up choosing to play for your arch rival.
Exactly.
You're not obligated to cheer him.
The extenuating circumstances that he wanted out and that he wanted also to go to a rival. And he wanted to go to that rival for a couple of years. And he found a way to skirt the system and eventually get from the Jets to the Vikings.
Roger Clemens, I guess he didn't win a World Series with the Red Sox, but Roger Clemens, not when he came back with the Yankees, because I think you know what happens there. Roger Clemens, when he decided to get in shape and motivated and maybe started taking a little something, and comes back with the Blue Jays. Do you cheer him? Or are you allowed to boo him as a Red Sox fan at that point?
Knowing the Red Sox historically as an organization now, I would definitely say you would probably cheer him. But at the same time, it really kind of rubs a lot of people the wrong way that after falling off towards the end of his time in Boston, all of a sudden in Toronto, he was awesome. Hey, Raj, why aren't you getting that special sauce with the Sox, huh? I mean, there's no crackdown yet from the commish.
Have you ever read the chapter from Tory's book? I think it was Tory wrote it with Tom Verducci about how Roger would get motivated before.
I have not. Fill me in.
He would get in a hot tub, and I believe it was his trainer saying that he'd get in the hot tub and he'd get absolutely as hot until he turned red like a lobster, and then he would have the trainer apply liniment, like Icy Hot or something, to his nether regions until he was snorting like a bull to sufficiently motivate him so he could go out and pitch.
That's no fun.
Now there's a couple questions. Why did the trainer have to do that? Why couldn't this be done on his own? And if you were the trainer, would that be a job requirement that you'd be willing to fill? Like, would you be, you're obviously,
no.
you believe in the health and the well-being and getting your team members, the guys on the team, you get to perform the most.
I'll say it again. No, absolutely not. No. You're doing that yourself, Raj. Yeah, I ain't doing it. And I'll say to someone who once, as part of a stunt at my old station, because I was, you know, I was the new guy and I was trying to make things happen as basically the part-timer called at any time person. Like, we actually did an experiment once where we said, hey, Paul, try this out and give your actual verbal reactions to it. So I went on the air after I had applied some. And that was the worst thing I ever done.
Really? The worst.
I feel bad. I feel bad for him. I feel bad.
From the 360, if Earl doesn't get a standing ovation, I'll be disappointed in the Seattle fans. Dude put his body online every game he played. Absolutely true. There was never a question about whether or not the level at which Earl Thomas tried.
And I agree with that. Will the Seahawks give him that opportunity? Because I feel like the Seahawks hold the cards here. What's the opportunity that Earl Thomas is going to have to sort of get that hero's welcome? I feel like the only spot is the individual introductions if the Ravens choose to go about doing it that way.
Okay. We've also got from the 360, how do you greet Earl Thomas? You give him the bird, of course, which is...
That's very hostile.
It is hostile. There's a little sense, and that was one of the funnier things. Of Earl did that. He's not denied doing it. He's clarified who it was at, and then he's also said he hopes he and didn't feel like he burned a bridge either, and that's part of just Earl being Earl in my mind. And maybe it's not even like, how do you react? What kind of greeting will he get? How do people feel about him? Because I find myself very much of... The 206 echoes exactly how I feel. I have no hard feelings with Earl, but I can't stand Sherman anymore. He is so petty and childish and has no sense of gratitude or humility. And it's not so much that I can't stand Sherman. It's that there's an actual sports rivalry that I feel with Richard. it's not personal in the way it's sort of a professional sports rivalry of like, I don't want him to win that. Whereas if Earl picked off a pass in Sunday's game, I would be more inclined to tip a cap in his direction and say good play rather than being like legitimately frustrated or feeling like, oh, I wish that wouldn't have happened. And now he gets to win.
Yeah, and I think that's a normal feeling to have. I mean, I know going back, I was incensed when Johnny Damon left for the Yankees. I was incensed when Adam Vinatieri left for the Colts. Two guys who are awesome playing for the respective teams that I was rooting for left, and they play for the arch rival. They play for the arch enemy. And even if it's completely rational as to why they left, because they weren't getting paid enough money, it's hard as a sports fan to rationalize that and to welcome them back, because you're always going to think of that person as a blood traitor. even if the reasons are totally justified.
From the 253, I want to see DK bulldoze Earl Thomas. Don't know if anybody would be all that objected to it. And then there's also kind of the other side of it, which is kind of that he put his body on the line, he was able to do it, and that of course you should be able to cheer him, and that the idea that, hey, you're able to salute it. So it's a very interesting contrast to see how people are feeling about him coming back. Marshawn always got a hero's welcome here, and will always get a hero's welcome. And in some ways, that was a guy that he retired. He didn't play. And then he decided to come back, and he wanted to come back with a different team. Earl, for this was the team decided not to resign Earl,
right,
much more than Earl decided to go somewhere else.
Right. And look, maybe he did make the final decision for the Seahawks easier with the way that he handled it at the very end. And at that point, I think that the relationship was definitely fractured and there was no going back on that front. But I you know, this is one of those things where I do think he is owed something, right? He's got to get something. Do you do what every single NBA team is doing these days, where a player who basically played like 15 minutes a game for a team gets like a tribute video? Like Dwight Howard has been getting tribute videos across the NBA for like the many, many places that he has stopped
by. No one cares. No, I think that there's been a collective decision by the NBA. Dwight Howard's a Hall of Famer, statistic-wise, but nobody likes him anymore. We'll see if he's able to resuscitate that. If how Seattle handled Richard Sherman's return is any indication, it's simply not going to be acknowledged. He's not going to be shown on the big screen. He's not going to be singled out.
Yeah.
We'll see if that's how it happens. And frankly, there's a football game to play, and that's probably best for everybody, is not to make it a sentimental sentimental trip. That'll be for when he's inducted to the Ring of Honor, which not only will happen but should happen. It is Danny and Gallant. It's time to get to our flags as we put everything we did under review next.
From the pocket, and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
I've got some issues. We're going to wait to get to those. Paul, you're first up today. Who are you throwing the flag on?
I feel like I have to throw it at myself. I know that we have outlawed this because Lydia tends to do
Lydia
this.
Lydia will always flag herself.
Yeah, that's true.
And in fact, she's found a way around it where she now just flags all of us collectively.
She
includes herself by having us all be collateral
damage. I'll call someone out today, Danny.
Okay,
ooh,
good.
Okay. Good. Look, I have to fall on the sword for this one. I have no idea how I confused Renegade by Styx with Rock You Like a Hurricane by the Scorpions.
Renegade! Rock You Like a Renegade!
Very accurate. Just like those songs sound so similar to one another. Yeah, I don't know how that happened. Look, I'm a little musically challenged. You're going to learn this over time. Basically, I discovered grunge music 4 years ago, which is, you know, about 20 years too late or so. So, yeah. Bear
you
with me, people.
I've got a confession to make, because when he said Renegade, I initially thought of a different song as well. I just understand my own limitations well enough to keep my trap shut, because I was thinking
Whoops.
Warrior by, I believe, Laura Branigan, where she talks about,
that's a poem.
I am the warrior, bang, bang. I thought that was the song.
Renegade!
Laura Branigan has more than one hit, people. I know you're
Does
sick
really?
Of Gloria, but it sounds like, yeah, did you not hear Gloria? That was like
I
the
know
blues.
Gloria.
So there you go. She's got more than one hit.
Yes, Warrior, and I believe that's the name of the song by Laura Branigan, is that was what I initially thought. But not, it wasn't that song.
You know, Sticks was my, Renegade was my song on the Pump Up CD. Like, that was my hype song in college for volleyball. And it really hurt my heart that you confused those two songs. That was my, we all got to pick one to go on the playlist, and that was mine.
I, for whatever reason, just have a hard time envisioning that being a pump-up song for you or for the Steelers, because whenever I hear that song, I think of Billy Madison stumbling around drunkenly after Veronica Vaughn dumped him and after he's about to lose Madison Hotels, the heir to being Madison Hotels, is Billy Madison.
Also might be why it's my pump-up song.
It's a great song because of that.
All right, Jessamine, who's your flag going
Danny, to? It's going to you, man. You know, my whole morning, it's really hard for me to get in this rhythm of, you know, drinking coffee and eating breakfast in the morning and 5:30, 6 a.m. Danny's like, there's a present for you in the rundown, which is a Google Doc that we all have access to at all times. And I go leaf through it, and then there's this huge, shirtless, almost jortless picture of the hair-chested, belly-chested Charlie Whitehurst lounging on a boat eating a strawberry, just gigantic, blown up in my face as I'm trying to prepare the show and also have not eaten yet.
It's also on the printed rundown, but listen.
That was me.
He's a good-looking guy.
Yeah.
He looks very suave, handsome. It sort of looks like a cologne ad.
I don't need to see that at 5 in the morning.
It's very strange that he's got a 1980s style water ski next to him. That's the weirdest part of the photo. It's not the strawberry. It's not the spunks that he's wearing, the merger between the trunks and the Speedo. It's the fact that he's got what appears to be a 1970s single water ski right next to him.
Wow. He kind of seems like a retro guy, though.
I love it.
I mean, if he's going in, he goes all in. He dates Jewel.
That's
you know,
true.
He's what, like 27? And he's dating
older than that now.
Maybe 30.
There's some Minshew mania going on with this guy.
No! How dare you blaspheme me? Nah. Flag! You nah. get a flag for that. You cannot
Minshew's
compare
doing
the
it
two.
Ironically. This is unapologetic. Is it Minshew's doing it knowing he looks ridiculous? Charlie's
is
doing
he?
That because that's his steez.
I think Minshew actually is pulling it off. Like I don't think he looks ridiculous. And as someone who sometimes, when he's dressed as hashtag Miami Paul, sometimes wears the Gardner Minshew wardrobe. Like I have some, not quite as aggress as old Gardner, but listen, we've got some same clothes.
There's a persona named Miami Paul.
It's actually a lifestyle. It is a fashion style. It is something to behold.
Is it your alter ego?
No.
Yeah,
it's just,
what do you channel?
It's just basically
like Miami Vice. Is it
basically? Yeah. It's like a throwback. It's just an 80s kind of vibe. You know,
like white suits with t-shirts underneath.
No, it's more. I like to go the Tom Selleck route with a nice little tropical shirt, and I will be wearing some sort of very pastel-esque shorts or linen pants. Looks fantastic.
Interesting.
All so, right, my flag is on you, Danny. You said I couldn't call anybody out, but I'm calling you out for thinking that officiating in the NFL should be a part-time job. You know what a part-time job is? A part-time job is like pulling ivy or babysitting for your neighbors or working at Abercrombie & Fitch, if people still do that. That's a part-time job. A part-time job is not being an NFL official in a billion-dollar league. No, it should be a full-time job.
Hand to God, I've never been more proud of you, Lydia. And I hope that doesn't sound patronizing at all.
No, it's not.
Like, that was absolutely awesome. That
okay,
warmed my heart.
It.
Almost
Thank
as
you.
Much as almost as much as the moment in the Democratic debates last night where Elizabeth Warren was talking about her experience in the Consumer Protection Bureau and Joe Biden turns and goes, "You did a good job." And she goes,
no.
"Thank you."
Somebody just texted in that Charlie Whitehurst is 37.
Yeah.
Heck yeah, he is.
Wow.
He's no spring chicken, or as we call it on this show, a spring cat.
Yeah, spring cat.
His headshot still looks like Jesus.
All right. My flag and the final flag goes out to all of you for failing to know what knee means, especially you, Gallant, with your negligible French ancestry, because nay is a term meaning original maiden name. So if you called someone, if my wife had the poor sense to change her name, she would be Sharon Pien Chan, nay, no, I'm sorry, Sharon Pien O'Neill, nay Chan. It's a naming convention. You guys all made me feel stupid as if it was some sort of fancy thing. It's not. It's just a basic part of English.
I thought it was this.
We are the knights who say, nee.
No?
Sharon Pien O'Neill, nee. Chan. No, that wouldn't work either. I was going to take her last name. I thought that would have worked well.
Ooh, that'd
Danny
be cool.
Chan. Yeah. Then I'd be Danny Chan, nay, O'Neal. Actually, I'll do that. It's been fun today. We had Michael Bumpus in studio. We brought in the professor, John Clayton.
We learned
we got into the return of Earl Thomas, Paul.
And we learned an awful lot about the state of Oregon, courtesy of you, Danny O'Neal, today.
Do you feel that you've been dragged into interstate warfare?
Well, as someone who can be easily impressed into nationalism, then yeah, I do, and I like it. I like looking at another state that's nearby us as rednecks.
I'd be an example of that. Well, that's going to do it for us today. You going to take a cat to water?
Every single day, dude. I'm getting a leash. I'm going to walk little Aria around. I'm going to be a real normal person out there this afternoon.
Do you have a leashed cat?
No, I'm going to try it, though, now that I thought about it.
Really?
You should talk to Rachel Bell over on Cairo. She's like a cat leasher, too.
Very curious as to how that would go. Pretty sure my cat would have an anxiety attack, but we'll have to test it. Might be animal juice.
That's going to do it for us. Jessamyn McIntyre is our producer. Lydia on the board. Paul, ready to do this tomorrow?
Absolutely. Let's get it.
See you at 7.